Ways of celebrating almost any minor or major achievement and creating a culture of pride and praise in your marriage. Rituals surrounding bad luck, setbacks, fatigue, or exhaustion. How can you support, heal, and renew yourselves? Community rituals for entertaining friends, caring for other people in your community, or opening your home to others you care about. Rituals surrounding lovemaking and talking about it. These are important events that get left till the very end of the day when everyone is exhausted. Couples often think that lovemaking should be spontaneous and don't want to plan for it. But if you think about when sex was at its best, usually it's during courtship. Those romantic dates were planned, down to what to wear, what perfume or cologne to use, where to go, the music and wine after dinner, and so on. So you need to plan for romance and sex. A ritual that makes you feel emotionally safe in talking about what is good and what needs improvement in lovemaking can be very helpful. Rituals for keeping in touch with relatives and friends. Family events and reunions can be planned. Birthdays and special events that recur. Examples are holidays of importance to you, religious celebration cycles, and anniversaries. There are also important rites of passage that can be discussed, such as confirmations, bat mitzvahs, graduations, and weddings. Your roles in life. Our sense of our place in the world is based to a great extent on the various roles we play. We are spouses, children, perhaps parents, and workers of one kind or another. From the standpoint of marriage, our perspective on our own roles and our mates can either add to the meaningfulness and harmony between us or create tension. Your marriage will feel deeper to the degree that your expectations of each other, what you feel your wife's or husband's place in your family ought to be, are similar. We're not talking here about seemingly superficial issues like who washes the dishes. We're talking about deeper feelings, about what you expect of yourself and your spouse. For example, both Ian and Hillary believe that a husband should be a protector and provider and the wife more of a nurturer. Chloe and Evan believed in an egalitarian marriage in which the spouses supported each other emotionally and financially. Because in both of these marriages, husband and wife had a similar philosophy about their roles, their marriages worked. Of course, were Ian married to Chloe and Hillary to Evan, there'd be more cause for friction. Having similar views about parenting, for example, the values you consider important to pass on to your children, also adds to a marriage's meaning. So do questions about the kind of interaction you should now have with your parents and siblings. Do you consider them part of your family, or outsiders you keep your distance from? Even your views of what it means to work, and the meaning you attach to your own work, can deepen your sense of connection with your spouse. In other words, to the extent that you feel similarly about these issues, your marriage will be strengthened. None of this means that you should, or for that matter could, see eye to eye on every philosophical or spiritual aspect of life. For example, couples who are in the same line of work may draw different meanings from it. Johnny is passionate about being a scientist. His work as a geologist forms a significant part of his identity and colors how he sees the world. He feels personally inspired by the scientific approach with its emphasis on objectivity and analysis, and he takes great pride in being a geologist. If you ask him what he is, he will say he is a geologist first. His wife Molly is also a geologist, but she doesn't identify quite so deeply with her profession. She sees herself as a woman first, rather than as a scientist. But this poses no difficulty in their marriage. They connect deeply in so many other areas of their lives together that this difference is never a sticking point. Exercise 2, roles. The more you can talk to each other frankly about your deeply held views about your roles in life, the more likely you are to reach a consensus that makes sense and comes naturally to your family. Musing over these questions separately and then together can help. 1. How do you feel about your role as a husband or wife? What does this role mean to you in your life? How did your father or mother view this role? How are you similar and different? How would you like to change this role? 2. How do you feel about your role as a father or mother? What does this role mean to you in your life? How did your father or mother view this role? How are you similar or different? How would you like to change this role? 3. How do you feel about your role as a son or daughter? What does this role mean to you in your life? How did your father or mother view this role? How are you similar and different? How would you like to change this role? 4. How do you feel about your role as a worker, your occupation? What does this role mean to you in your life? How did your father or mother view this role? How are you similar and different? How would you like to change this role? 5. How do you feel about your role as a friend to others? What does this role mean to you in your life? How did your father or mother view this role? How are you similar and different? How would you like to change this role? 6. How do you feel about your role in your community? What does this role mean to you in your life? How did your father or mother view this role? How are you similar and different? How would you like to change this role? 7. How do you balance these roles in your life? Personal goals. Part of what makes life meaningful are the goals we strive to achieve. While we all have some very practical goals, like earning a certain income, we also have deeper, more spiritual goals. For one person, the goal may be to find peace and healing after a tumultuous, abusive childhood. For another, it may be to raise children who are good-hearted and generous. Many times we don't talk about our deepest goals. Sometimes we haven't even asked ourselves these questions. But when we start, it gives us the opportunity to explore something that can have a profound impact on ourselves and our marriage. Not only will you increase the intimacy of your marriage by sharing your deepest goals with your spouse, but to the extent that you work together to achieve shared goals, they can be a path toward making your union even richer. For example, both Emily and Alex were committed to doing volunteer work for their church. Once their kids were grown, they decided they wanted to leave a spiritual legacy to their community. So he joined the board of directors of the religious school, and she started an adult education program at the church for people who wanted to become reacquainted with their faith. "I would have done this on my own," says Emily, "but feeling in partnership with Alex about the importance of giving something back to my community and my church has made it an even more rewarding experience. I feel renewed not just in my faith, but in my marriage as well." Exercise 3, goals. To explore with your spouse the meaning of goals in your individual lives and your marriage, ask yourselves the following questions. 1. Write a mission statement of what your mission in life is. Write your own obituary. What would you like it to say? 2. What goals do you have in life? For yourself? For your spouse? For your children? What do you want to accomplish in the next 5 to 10 years? 3. What is one life dream that you want to fulfill before you die? 4. We often fill our time with things that demand our immediate attention, putting out fires, so to speak. But what are the truly important things in your life that are great sources of energy and pleasure that you really need to block out time for? The important things that keep getting postponed or crowded out? 5. What is the role of spirituality in your lives? What was this role in your families growing up? How should this be in your family? Shared symbols. Another sign of shared meaning in a marriage is that your lives are surrounded by things that represent the values and beliefs you share. Often, these things are literally objects. Religious icons like a crucifix or mezuzah are the most obvious symbols of faith a couple may display in their home. But there are other, more personalized ones as well. For Jenna and Michael, their dining room table held special significance. They had saved up for many years to have it custom made by a local carpenter who was an expert carver. Every time they opened it up for family celebrations, its beauty and strength spoke to them of the beauty and stability of their own marriage. Another family kept a little statuette of a baby angel on the mantle in memory of their first baby who was stillborn. The angel commemorated the baby, but also represented their own resilience and deep love and support for each other, which had gotten them through this tragedy and allowed them to go on to have a large, happy family. Some symbols are abstract, but no less significant to a marriage. Family stories, for example, can be symbolic of a whole set of values. In that sense, Helen's story about her great-grandparents, who kept their love alive even when separated by an ocean, symbolized the family's deep sense of loyalty. Every time that story was retold, and almost by definition, family stories do get told over and over again through the years, it was symbolic of the great value they placed on loyalty. Her husband Kevin's story of his great-grandmother's general store and her gracious generosity toward the poor was also a metaphor for another deeply held family value, that money is not as important as being connected to your community. Even a home itself can be of great symbolic meaning to a couple. They may view it not only as the place they eat and sleep, but as the spiritual center of their lives together, the place where they consummate their love, where their children were conceived and grew, and so on. Exercise 4, Symbols. The following questions will help you talk to each other about the significance of symbols in your marriage. 1. What symbols, such as photos or objects, show who our family is in the world? What we value about being? Supply your last names. 2. Family stories are also symbols. They often stand for and teach a whole set of values. What are some stories about your family that go way back in history? Stories you are proud of and want to be a part of the tradition your family continues. 3. What does a home mean to you? What qualities must it have for you? What was a home like in your families growing up? 4. What in your life is symbolic of your philosophy of how to lead a meaningful, good life? For example, giving to charity or wearing a crucifix or lighting a candle for dead ancestors may be symbolic of your sense of meaning. Do you feel that you are failing to do this to the degree you'd like? Feeling a sense of unity with your spouse on most of the deep, burning issues is unlikely to occur overnight. Exploring these issues together is really an ongoing, lifelong process. The goal shouldn't be to agree on every aspect of what is profoundly meaningful to you, but to have a marriage where you are both open to each other's most dearly held beliefs. The more you create a marriage where these convictions can be readily divulged, the more joyous will be the journey through life that you share. Afterward, what now? No book or therapist can solve all of your marital problems, but by incorporating these 7 principles into your marriage, you really can change the course of your relationship. Even making just a small and gentle change in the trajectory of your marriage can have a dramatic, positive effect over time. The catch, of course, is that you have to build on the change and keep it going. Improving your marriage is a kind of journey. Like all journeys, it begins by suspending disbelief, taking one small step, and then seeing where you are and taking the next step. If you get stuck or take a few missteps, listen to portions of this book again with an ear toward charting where your marriage is now. Then you'll be able to figure out how to help it along in the right direction. Once you feel your marriage is on course, here are some ideas to help you maintain momentum. The Magic 5 Hours. When we followed up on couples who attended our Seattle workshops, we wondered what would distinguish those couples whose marriages continued to improve from those whose marriages did not. Would we find that the successful group had dramatically overhauled their lives? Far from it. To our surprise, we discovered that they were devoting only an extra 5 hours a week to their marriage. Although each couple had their own style of spending these extra 5 hours, some clear patterns emerged. In general, what these couples were doing was giving their marriage a concentrated refresher course in the 7 principles. The approach works so phenomenally well that I've come to call it the Magic 5 Hours. Here's how you can do it, too. Partings. Make sure that before you say goodbye in the morning, you've learned about one thing that is happening in your spouse's life that day. From lunch with the boss, to a doctor's appointment, to a scheduled phone call with an old friend. Time, 2 minutes a day times 5 working days. Total, 10 minutes. Reunions. Be sure to engage in a stress-reducing conversation at the end of each workday. Time, 20 minutes a day times 5 days. Total, 1 hour, 40 minutes. admiration and appreciation. Find some way every day to communicate genuine affection and appreciation toward your spouse. Time, 5 minutes a day times 7 days. Total, 35 minutes. Affection. Kiss, hold, grab, and touch each other during the time you're together. Make sure to kiss each other before going to sleep. Think of that kiss as a way to let go of any minor irritations that have built up over the day. In other words, lace your kiss with forgiveness and tenderness for your partner. Time, 5 minutes a day times 7 days. Total, 35 minutes. Weekly date. This can be a relaxing, low-pressure way to stay connected. Ask each other questions that let you update your love maps and turn toward each other. Of course, you can also use these dates to talk out a marital issue or work through an argument you had that week if necessary. Think of questions to ask your spouse, like, are you still thinking about redecorating the bedroom? Where should we take our next vacation? Or, how are you feeling about your boss these days? Time, 2 hours once a week. Total, 2 hours. Grand total, 5 hours. As you can see, the amount of time involved in incorporating these changes into your relationship is quite minimal. Yet these 5 hours will help enormously in keeping your marriage on track. Remember, working briefly on your marriage every day will do more for your health and longevity than working out at a health club. The marital poop detector. Some marriage experts claim that a significant cause of unhappiness in marriage is that husbands and wives just have overblown expectations of each other. By lowering these expectations, the argument goes, you become less likely to feel disappointment. But Donald Balcom, Ph.D. of the University of North Carolina, has debunked this idea thoroughly by studying couples' standards and expectations of each other. He has found that people with the highest expectations for their marriage usually wind up with the highest quality marriages. This suggests that by holding your relationship to high standards, you are far more likely to achieve the kind of marriage you want than you are by looking the other way and letting things slide. Our research on newlyweds confirms what Balcom found. The couples we studied who adjusted to high levels of negativity, irritability, emotional distance in their marriage ended up less happy or satisfied years later. Those who refused to put up with lots of negativity, who insisted on gently confronting each other when, say, contempt or defensiveness threatened to become pervasive, wound up happy and satisfied years later. These findings suggest that every marriage ought to be equipped with a built-in early warning system that lets you know when your marital quality is in danger of deteriorating. I call this system the marital poop detector, because it's really a way of saying something just doesn't smell right. Someone once said that to men, the 5 most frightening words in the English language are, "Let's talk about our relationship." Truth is, those words can be just as frightening to plenty of women. The best way to conquer this fear is to talk about issues in your relationship while they are still minor, before they build up steam and become combustible. A marital poop detector lets you do that. Usually one member of a couple tends to take the lead in sniffing out trouble. More often than not, it is the wife. When her husband gets cranky or withdrawn, she calls him on it and finds out what's wrong. But there's no reason why you both can't perform this function in your marriage. Here is a list of questions to ask yourself once a week. It will guide you in assessing how your relationship is faring. Just remember to discuss these things using a softened startup and without being critical of your spouse. The best approach is to say something like, "Hey, I really feel out of touch with you. What's going on?" Be careful not to address any issues right before bedtime. This could interfere with your sleep. Instructions. Use these questions to assess how things went in your marriage today or lately, and whether you want to bring up any issues. Select as many as you think apply. If you choose more than 4, think about talking things over gently with your partner within the next 3 days. 1. I have been acting irritable. 2. I have been feeling emotionally distant. 3. There has been a lot of tension between us. 4. I find myself wanting to be somewhere else. 5. I have been feeling lonely. 6. My partner has seemed emotionally unavailable to me. 7. I have been angry. 8. We have been out of touch with each other. 9. My partner has little idea of what I'm thinking. 10. We have been under a great deal of stress, and it has taken its toll on us. 11. I wish we were closer right now. 12. I have wanted to be alone a lot. 13. My partner has been acting irritable. 15. My partner has been acting emotionally distant. 15. My partner's attention seems to be somewhere else. 16. I have been emotionally unavailable to my partner. 17. My partner has been angry. 18. I have little idea of what my partner is thinking. 19. My partner has wanted to be alone a lot. 20. We really need to talk. 21. We haven't been communicating very well. 22. We have been fighting more than usual. 23. Lately, small issues escalate. 24. We have been hurting each other's feelings. 25. There hasn't been very much fun or joy in our lives. Forgive yourself. After working through the 7 principles, it is probably very clear to you that there is no such thing as constructive criticism. All criticism is painful. Unlike complaints, specific requests for change, criticism doesn't make a marriage better. It inevitably makes it worse. What causes a spouse to be chronically critical? We have discovered that there are 2 sources. The first is an emotionally unresponsive partner. Put simply, if Natalie keeps complaining to Jonah about leaving his newspapers on the bathroom floor and he just ignores her, eventually she is likely to start criticizing him, calling him a slob instead of politely reminding him about recycling. This change in Natalie's approach is understandable, but it is hardly helpful to her marriage since her criticism will make Jonah even less responsive. The only way out of this cycle is for both of them to change, which won't be easy. It takes courage to be less critical of an unresponsive mate, and it takes courage to turn toward a partner who's always harping on your flaws. But both changes are necessary to end the cycle. The other source of criticism in marriage comes from within. It is connected to self-doubt that has developed over the course of one's life, particularly during childhood. In other words, it begins as criticism of oneself. Aaron cannot really appreciate or enjoy his own accomplishments. When he has a setback in his business, he feels deep down that he is worthless. When his business is successful, he doesn't allow himself to be proud. There's a voice inside him that says, "This is not good enough." He continually searches for approval, but cannot enjoy it or even accept it when it is offered. What happens to Aaron when he marries Courtney? Since he has trained his mind to see what is wrong, what is missing, and not to appreciate what is there, it's difficult for him to rejoice in what's right with Courtney or their marriage. So instead of appreciating Courtney's wonderful qualities, including her sweetness, her devotion, and the deep emotional support she offers him when he is in danger of losing a major client, he focuses on what he considers her flaws, that she is highly emotional, somewhat awkward socially, and not as meticulously clean around the house as he'd like. The story of Aaron and Courtney is what's wrong 85% of the time in most marriages. If you consider yourself inadequate, you are always on the lookout for what is not there in yourself and your partner. And let's face it, anyone you marry will be lacking in certain desirable qualities. The problem is that we tend to focus on what's missing in our mate and overlook the fine qualities that are there. We take those for granted. If you recognize yourself in the description of the self-critic, the best thing you can do for yourself and your marriage is to work on accepting yourself with all of your flaws. As I look back on my own life so far, I realize the immense difference it has made in my role as a husband and a father for me to forgive myself for all of my imperfections. One route toward this forgiveness may be your personal spiritual beliefs. My religion, Judaism, has helped me to cherish and nourish what is good and strong in myself and in my relationship. In Judaism, prayer is primarily used either for thanksgiving or to praise. Yet the religion claims that God does not require endless praise, flattery, or thanks. So, what is the purpose of these prayers? They are not meant for God's benefit, but to help the person who is praying. These prayers are designed to help us appreciate the works of God, this beautiful world we have inherited, and to notice and be thankful for the blessings we continually receive. Whatever your religion, there is a message in here for your marriage. Expressions of thanksgiving and praise are the antidotes to the poison of criticism and its deadly cousin, contempt. The following exercise will start you on this path. An exercise in thanksgiving. Step 1. For 1 week, try to be aware of your tendency to criticize, to see what is missing, to focus on what is not there and comment on it. Try instead to focus on what is right. Notice what you have and what others contribute. Search for things to praise. Begin with simple things. Praise the world. Appreciate your own breathing, the sunrise, the beauty of a rainstorm, the wonder in your child's eyes. Utter some silent words of thanksgiving, to no one in particular, for these small wonders in your day. This will begin to change your focus on the negative. Step 2. Give at least one genuine, heartfelt praise to your spouse each day for an entire week. Notice the effects of this exercise on your partner and yourself. If you are able, extend the exercise one more day. Then, add another day. Extend the exercise to others, for example, to your children. When you meet someone new, look for what is special about this person. Appreciate these qualities. Remember, this all has to be genuine and heartfelt. Don't be phony. Notice these positive qualities. Enjoy them. Try to tell people what you notice and genuinely appreciate about them. Just find one thing for each person. Ignore the shortcomings. As you stretch the period of thanksgiving one day beyond a week, and then another day, and then another, you'll receive a great gift. You will begin to forgive yourself. Grace and forgiveness will enter your world. This is what the spiritual amazing grace is all about. You begin to enjoy your own accomplishments rather than consider them inadequate. One of the most meaningful gifts a parent can give a child is to admit his or her own mistake, to say, "I was wrong here," or "I'm sorry." This is so powerful because it also gives the child permission to make a mistake, to admit having messed up and still be okay. It builds in the forgiveness of self. In the same way, saying "I'm sorry" and meaning it to your spouse is a very significant event. The more you can imbue your relationship with a spirit of thanksgiving and the graceful presence of praise, the more meaningful and fulfilling your lives together will be. This concludes the 7 principles for making marriage work.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.